mountain town is taking a chance. So is the bespectacled gent from that strange land east of the Hudson, who throws it all away to run a small museum or a hotel where Buffalo Bill slept. But by showing the frontier spirit in the 21st century, they're keeping the towns of the West alive and thriving. We salute them here and wonder, if you have a working car and a good pair of boots, why aren't you already on the road? San Angelo, Texas. Colonel Ranald McKenzie's name doesn't ring bells today, but his 4th Cavalry's 1874 victory at Paladura Canyon helped end the bloody Red River Indian War. Hear that thrilling story and others at Fort Concho National Historic Landmark in San Angelo, a town that combines rich history with contemporary attractions, earning it recognition as our top western town for 2020. The fort, once under McKenzie's command, offers exhibits, artifacts, and tours of 23 original and restored structures. The San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo, begun in 1932 and dedicated to promoting the agricultural way of life, draws 200,000 people over 3 weeks. The show is great for families and has an old-fashioned Western feel where you can see kids learning responsibility by taking care of their animals, says Diane Bays, vice president at the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Enjoy downtown's Concho River Walk, named one of America's best public spaces. It's beautiful any time, but especially at Christmas, when 3 million lights hang, 6 million counting their reflection on the water. Walk the Stairway to Heaven to the second floor above Legend Jewelers to Miss Hattie's Bordello Museum. Watch craftsmen work in the window of bootmaker M.L. Letty's, and visit the Santa Fe Depot and Railway Museum. Don't mind the fiberglass sheep adorning the sidewalks. They honor San Angelo's status as a major wool producer. Downtown's best feature might be its 13 large murals. They depict historical scenes, such as a rumbling stagecoach. One commemorates the late great Western writer Elmer Kelton, a San Angelo resident. New addition as of last spring, Paintbrush Alley, between Concho and Towhig Avenues. Murals there show such scenes as a cowboy lassoing from horseback. Follow boot prints on the ground to learn the Texas two-step. Walk across Celebration Bridge to the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts. It has 3 galleries and a rooftop terrace with great views of a true Western town. We're proud to have that title, says Bays. The Heartache Kid. John Pardee's laid-back style and devotion to tradition are reeling in the fans. Technically, John Pardee never finished college, but he learned a valuable lesson when he was at California's Butte College. He needed to move to Nashville. I tried college for a while, but I started a country band when I was there called Northern Comfort. We were good and we had a following, Pardee tells CNI. That was such a learning time for me. I realized the band wasn't going to go anywhere, but I knew I had to if I wanted to do this professionally. So he worked. He saved. And on February 23, 2008, when he was 22, Pardee moved to Tennessee. But you don't just waltz into Music Row and start selling out arenas. And looking back on that, Pardee, 34, says he wouldn't have it any other way. He lifeguarded for a while, did other odd jobs, and started writing song after song after song, always the kind that stayed true to the roots of traditional country. That's what country is supposed to sound like, he says. It's supposed to have fiddle and steel. That was country to me. I wanted to do what my heroes did, so I just stuck with it. Initially, it took fans a while to connect. There was one Dallas show Pardee played where only 5 people showed up. "I'll never forget that," he says. "You can't get mad about it, though. You just have to try to figure it out. It keeps you humble." What matters to Pardee now, he said, is that when guys like Ronnie Dunn and Kix Brooks shake your hand, you feel like one of the boys. It's a mutual adoration club Pardee's honored to be a part of. The first time Pardee remembers feeling the full impact of Brooks and Dunn's music was around 2007, when they were touring with Alan Jackson and made a California stop. "I remember hearing them sing Hillbilly Deluxe and thinking, damn, that is such a badass honky-tonk song." But the song Pardee sings on Reboot is much, much older. It's from 1991, off their debut album Brand New Man, released when Pardee was only 6. It's called My Next Broken Heart. "I wanted one of them old-school honky-tonk jams with that shuffle vibe," he says. And when it came time to record, Pardee was ready. "I'd been practicing, and Ronnie said he could tell," he recalled. "But part of me was still like, holy shoot, I'm in the studio singing with Brooks and Dunn. I was right there, right next to Ronnie. At one point, he even told me, stop singing so good." Pardee's new album, Heartache Medication, due out in late September, is full of that same kind of old-school country, accompanied by some modern influences for good measure. Hear John Pardee's latest album and its namesake single, and find out where to see him live by visiting johnpardee.com. Take a tour of some of our favorite culinary capitals with this Guide to the Food Cities of the West. Taste of the West. The West is chock full of regional culinary specialties. We joyfully catalog them in CNI's pages and its website. We give them print space in this year's Taste of the West, too, as we've done in previous Taste of the West features. But this year, we're doing something a little different. We're zooming out this year to get a bigger picture of the West's food landscape. This time around, we're highlighting Western cities with dynamic culinary scenes and point you toward restaurants, breweries, distilleries, shops, and other food-focused businesses that reflect the Old West and the contemporary West, the one that continues to attract hard-working folk and make our slice of the country a deeply rich one. Take your time with this guide to the food cities of the West. We hope you will relish it and allow it to drive your appetite and expansions of a different sort. Las Vegas, beyond the glitzy gourmet. Las Vegas has been reimagined and rebuilt more than once since gangster Bugsy Siegel turned a patch of Nevada desert into the Flamingo Hotel. But if you look hard enough, you can still find a few classic dining spots from the city's Rat Pack era glory days. And if you're lucky, you might get to enjoy a meal there before the next round of implosions. The Golden Steer Steakhouse. Las Vegas's oldest steakhouse opened in 1958 in a rundown strip mall just west of the Strip near what used to be the Sahara Hotel. Despite numerous expansions, the place hasn't changed significantly from the days when reservations were being made for Frank Sinatra, always in booth number 22, Nat King Cole, and Elvis Presley. It's easy to spot from the road because there's a big cow on the roof. Clearly, this isn't the type of place featured in those slick TV ads for Vegas featuring millennials partying at a trendy resort nightclub. Let them have their blueberry martinis and pink flamingo punch. We'd rather slip into one of the steer's comfy red leather booths and enjoy a ribeye from heaven. GoldenSteerLasVegas.com. Piero's Italian Cuisine. Piero's, located just off the Las Vegas Strip, served its first sumptuous osso buco in 1982. Not that long ago by most city standards, but in Vegas, that's the equivalent of the salon in London that's been serving afternoon tea since 1707. If you've seen the movie Casino, you've already had a glimpse inside this dark and intimate haven for Northern Italian cuisine. Owner Freddie Glusman has served U.S. presidents, celebrities from Frank Sinatra to Robert De Niro, and a few folks whose portraits now hang in the city's Mob Museum. Piero'sCuisine.com. Bob Taylor's Original Ranch House. It doesn't get much more original than one of the city's oldest restaurants. Bob Taylor's staked out its place in a former home in the boonies in 1955 and has ridden its cowboy theme ever since, even as the bright lights encroached ever closer. You still enter through a rustic ranch gate, maybe grab a drink in the big cocktail lounge bar, and then order one of their thick aged steaks straight off the exhibition mesquite grill. If you eat a whole 32-ounce New York cut, dessert's free. Tiramisu and key lime pie come recommended. Or just sit back and digest amid the John Wayne posters, saddles, and collection of Hollywood cowboy spurs. BobTaylorsRanchHouse.com. St. Helena, California. Wining and Dining. Situated between Calistoga and Rutherford, Napa Valley's tiny St. Helena packs a significant punch when it comes to dining and drinking options. Archetype is a must-visit for any gourmand looking for an exceptional meal at any time of the day. The upscale bistro serves breakfast, brunch, lunch, happy hour, and dinner, and even boasts a kid's menu. The centerpiece of the experience is the oak-fired oven and grill, where dishes like grilled asparagus with vegan green garlic aioli and crispy maritake mushrooms shine. Down the road, the multifaceted Long Meadow Ranch features a general store, cafe, and wine tasting room, but the crown jewel is its restaurant, Farmstead. Housed in a converted barn, Farmstead reflects the ethos of the Hall family, who owned the property and lovingly restored it from ruin in 1989. The menu features seasonal dishes sourced solely from local waters, ranches, and farms. The vegetarian-friendly menu is approachable, with a distinct wine country casual style that permeates the region, with dishes like a grass-fed cheeseburger, Yukon potato gnocchi with wine forest mushrooms, English peas and bellwether ricotta, and California-grown arborio rice with peas and carrots, toasted seeds, and parmesan. The key to Napa Valley is that not everything is as it seems. What looks like a regular old supermarket is in fact one of the region's best specialty stores. Sunshine Foods Market, which has been open since 1975, is a mainstay of the area, serving everything from artisanal charcuterie and cheese trays to top-notch butcher meat and seafood and everything in between, including boxed-to-go lunches. St. Helena is smack dab in the middle of California's storied Napa Valley wine country. But that doesn't mean there aren't other worthy drinks and drinking establishments to seek out. One of the most beloved by locals and visitors alike is Mad Fritz, a brewery started by winemaker-turned-brewer Niall Zacherle, who received his degree in fermentation science at University of California, Davis. despite also being a winemaker at David Arthur Vineyards. Zacherle makes ales and lagers at Mad Fritz that are sourced from local aquifers, springs, and reservoirs, and craft malted single variety barleys that are organically and biodynamically farmed. Archetype.napa.com, longmeadowranch.com, sunshinefoodsmarket.com, madfritz.com, davidarthur.com. Oklahoma City, more than A-OK Eats. The food world, well, at least the parts in New York and Los Angeles, were stunned when Andrew Knowlton of Bon Appetit magazine gave Oklahoma City's tasting menu-focused None Such the top berth in his 2018 Best New Restaurants in America feature. OKC doesn't exactly come to mind as a dining destination. Indeed, the magazine's editorial highlighted that. A city no national critic has ever paid attention to, Knowlton acknowledged, but stumbling across images of None Such's plated courses on Instagram, featuring dishes that looked as though they were served at cutting-edge kitchens in Copenhagen or Tokyo, was enough to persuade him to check it out. He booked a flight, sat down for a meal, and was smitten, not only with the chef's penchant for foraging local ingredients and partnering with area farmers, but with the execution and experience. Lest you think this is a case of a city slicker gazing onto flyover country theater, it's important to note Knowlton didn't just consider None Such ambitious for its location. It's ambitious, period. Earlier this year, that manifested in dishes like tea plate-sized Lovage waffles, their grid-like green-infused dough glimmering like grass at sunset. It was accompanied by a bowl of caviar, rhubarb, and green strawberries that twist with rich, tart, and sweet flavors. The writer's praise has raised the city's profile. But there's more to Oklahoma City that gives it a spot on our list of the West's destination food cities. The state capital city, a few hours north of Dallas, is also home to the Prairie Artisan Ales Taproom, a watering hole for craft beer aficionados who appreciate precision and experimentation. Since 2012, Krebs, Oklahoma-based Prairie Artisan Ales, has balanced execution of well-defined contemporary beer styles, for example, IPAs and stouts, with the carefree production of farmhouse ales, whose flavor profiles depend on the quirky actions of yeast. This laissez-faire attitude toward craft beer production isn't novel. Other American craft breweries specialize in it, but perhaps none more consistently than Prairie. The brewery might come across as nerdy or comical, but with releases named Vape Tricks, a sour ale aged on cherries, and Prairie Vue Francais, a Belgian farmhouse table beer. But beers christened Paradise, an imperial stout made with vanilla and coconut, and Bomb, another imperial stout, but this one aged on coffee, vanilla, chocolate, and chilies, sound like the perfect accompaniment to seasonal shifts. Equally as inventive as None Such and Prairie Artisan Ales is Pie Junkies. The bakery, a team effort between Darcy Shine and Leslie Cole Mossman, that started in 2010 as a hobby, offers flavors familiar and creative. The red velvet cream and birthday pies give cake lovers a reason to dabble on the other side. Bird Dog Buttermilk gets its extra kick from Bird Dog Blackberry Whiskey. Then there's the ultra-popular Drunken Turtle, a graham cracker crust chocolate pie that puts all the best stuff on top, pecans and salted bourbon caramel. Of course, we recommend experiencing Oklahoma City stalwarts like Cattleman's Steakhouse, where a T-bone will never do you wrong, but for a taste of the modern culinary West, OKC will do you right too, which is far more than A-OK with us. Nonesuchokc.com, PrairieAles.com, PieJunkie.com, CattlemansRestaurant.com. Houston, H-Town, Chowtown. No assembly of food cities of the West should be complete without Houston. The largest city in Texas, H-Town, with an estimated population of 2.3 million as of 2017, is also the country's most diverse city. What's more, city residents speak nearly 150 languages. This, we dare say, makes for incredible eating and drinking beyond Texas staples like Tex-Mex and barbecue, and the margaritas, cold beer, and Big Red that wash it all down. In this town, you can get everything from a plate of locally famed Nancy cakes, served up with butter, smoked trout roe, and honey at the sophisticated Nancy's Hustle, to a steaming bowl of Vietnamese pho and order of Goi Quan at Huyen Restaurant. The largest Vietnamese diaspora population has led to myriad restaurants specializing in their native cuisines and intersections with American and Texas eats. Highlights include Crawfish and Noodles, where the signature Viet Cajun crawfish is available at four heat levels. From classic fare from our southern neighbor to contemporary renditions found on either side of the border, to good old-fashioned Tex-Mex, Mexican food remains as popular as ever. Beloved James Beard award-winning restaurateurs Hugo Ortega and Tracy Vaught, co-operators of H-Town Restaurant Group, offer a range of classic Mexican dishes at casual Hugo's in the Montrose area and Sochi. The menu at the latter downtown hotspot skews toward the finer end of the spectrum, with a mezcal list sure to excite aficionados of agave spirits. Julep, a longtime down-home cocktail lounge led by James Beard award-winning bartender Alba Huerta, is another spot for a good mezcal drink, or let's say, a julep. Houston's reputation as a national culinary heavyweight has a lot to do with the city's diverse population and how it's reflected in the restaurant scene. Beside Ortega and Huerta, there is another name that can't be left out of a discussion of Houston restaurants, that of chef-owner Chris Shepherd. Since closing his beloved Underbelly, he has gone on to open other acclaimed restaurants, UB Preserve and Georgia James Steakhouse, among them. But about Tex-Mex, one can't go wrong with the original Nymphas on Navigation. Founded in 1973 by Mama Nympha Lorenzo, Nymphas has a long-standing reputation as one of the best. Take a stab at their legendary fajitas and unbeatable margarita specials that include their refreshing signature drink, the original Ninfarita. And we still haven't gotten around to barbecue. Tex-Mex barbecue is a developing style of smoked meat that melds the best of Texas homegrown culinary traditions. Think peppery brisket or garlic clove studded chicken served with beef fat flour tortillas at the Pit Room, or the whole spread of Texas Q with nearly translucent tortillas and hearty tamales from the JQ's Tex-Mex BBQ pop-up. It's pure Houston, or to channel the parlance of Tejas, puro Houston. CrawfishandNoodles.com, HugoRestaurant.net, ZochiHouston.com, JulepHouston.com, UnderbellyHospitality.com, ThePitRoomBBQ.com, Facebook.com/JQSTexMexBBQ. Vancouver, British Columbia. the Big Three. Vancouver is legendarily diverse. It's the most Asian city outside of Asia in terms of population, and British Columbia is home to 60% of all indigenous languages spoken in Canada. But eating in the country's third largest city comes down to the Big Three: seafood, Chinese, and Canadian. That last one is tricky to define, even for locals, but it generally means slabs of meat. On the edge of North America's last great fishery, a lot of that wild Alaska salmon you love starts its life in spawning streams in BC. It's natural that seafood is a highlight of any trip to the city. For a splurge, it doesn't get more celebrated than Boulevard Kitchen and Oyster Bar. Classically trained chef Alex Chen won the gold medal at the 2018 Canadian Culinary Championships and Chef of the Year title at the 2018 Vancouver Magazine Restaurant Awards, where Boulevard also picked up wins in the Best Upscale and Best Seafood categories. His seared coho salmon comes with roasted cauliflower, buttermilk emulsion, curry oil pumpkin seeds, and kohlrabi. For Chinese, some might complain Dynasty Dumpling House is an obvious choice, but only in the way that the Grand Canyon or Yosemite are obvious choices. The local institution for Zhao Long Bao, soup dumpling, and other Shanghainese specialties has 5 locations. You'll wait for a table at the Robson Street restaurant, but on Vancouver's best street for Asian food, lots of Korean and Japanese places nearby, the atmosphere is always buzzing. For Canadian souvenir foods and quick bites, Edible Canada. Across the street from Granville Island Public Market is unbeatable. But the unexpected star of Canadian cuisine is forage. As one diner recently told us, forage is the place vegetarians go to cheat. That's because its commitment to all things BC and all foods sustainable and natural makes its menu one of the most creative in the country. Where else will you find a Saturday bison board experience, barbecue duck chowder, and local foraged, get it, mushrooms with Oganagan goat cheese? Vancouver is spilling over with excellent local beers and spirits. A great place to try a few is Tap and Barrel. The convention center location is good, but you'll find more locals at the North Vancouver Shipyards location, enjoying a glorious view of downtown across Vancouver Harbor. Boulevard, Vancouver.ca, Dynasty.ca, EdibleCanada.com, ForageVancouver.com, TapAndBarrel.com. Pietown, New Mexico. Enchantment by the Slice. New Mexico may be better known for spicy dishes like pozole and green chili burgers, but on Highway 60, 130 miles from Albuquerque and close to the Continental Divide, you'll find a soft spot for pies. Pietown gets its name from a bakery that set up business at the side of the road in the 1920s and sold apple pies. The first customers were largely settlers from places like Texas and Oklahoma, heading west for a better life, but stopping off for a New Mexico apple pie. Almost 100 years later, people are still stopping for pies. Kathy Knapp, who runs the Pioneer restaurant, motto, "We serve pie, that's it," sells 25 to 30 pies a day in the summer, and 40 to 50 per day on holiday weekends. There are 2 other cafes in town that also sell pies, and that's about it as far as Pietown goes. According to Knapp, the census says the population is 186, but if that's the case, she wants to know where they all are. Pietown proper is only a handful of families, she says. It's isolated, and the elements can be harsh. If you're not good at entertaining yourself, the quiet can be disquieting. I've left twice, defeated, but something kept drawing me back. Maybe I just like the challenge of being a modern-day pioneer. Knapp had never made a pie until she moved to Pietown in 1995 to help her mother. When she eventually took over, she called her mom a lot, cried a lot, and threw away a lot of pies. Now, during Pietown's Pie Festival, second Saturday every September, she'll make 250 pies, always lots of the most popular cherry. The menu changes every day, and flavors are displayed on a pie chart. They also celebrate Pie Day, March 14th, 3/14. New Mexico apple with green chilies and pine nuts is the most curious good seller, Knapp says. Coconut cream is the most popular with a crowd of a certain age, and chocolate chess pie with red chili always sells out. Even when it comes to pies, it seems in New Mexico, some like it hot. Pioneer.com. McCall, Idaho. Ski town, scarfing. The cutwater on Payette Lake. Nestled within the iconic shore lodge by the lapping waves of Payette Lake in McCall, this fine dining restaurant offers a wide variety of classic dishes with a Western twist. The bison brisket sandwich features house-smoked and hand-chopped South Dakota bison, complemented by cherry peppers and a tangy barbecue sauce infused with fresh Northwest huckleberries. For a new perspective on poutine, try the North Fork cheese fries. Made with locally grown Kennebec potatoes, tender steak, and garlic cheese curd, the secret to this dish lies in the French demi-glaze that makes the dish a suitable entree. TheCutwaterMcCall.com. Steamer's Steak and Seafood. For a landlocked state, Idaho has a surprising amount of world-class seafood. In McCall, look no further than Steamer's Steak and Seafood, which operates out of the century-old Lake Street Station building overlooking Payette Lake. A salute to a favorite Idaho fish, the pan-fried ruby rainbow trout, is complemented by a lemon caper butter finish to give the flaky fillet a citrus punch. Western classics from the sea include halibut and sockeye salmon. Steamersrestaurant.com. Evening Rise Bread Company. McCall may be a sleepy town outside of the summer tourism season, but Evening Rise Bread Company owner Corey McDonald never sleeps. McDonald rises each morning at 3:30 to make several breads for the day from scratch. Although the shop boasts more than 50 different types of bread, some of the most popular are sun-dried tomato and garlic, rosemary and garlic, cinnamon raisin, jalapeno cheddar, and nine grain. The shop also hand-slices fresh cheeses and meats daily, helping to live up to its billing as McCall's best sandwich shop. Salmon River Brewery. Named after the state's longest continuous free-flowing river, this eclectic brewery serves up a healthy dose of Idaho culture, plastered across each wall, to pair with its more than 20 microbrews on tap. The wintertime favorite, Buzz Buzz Coffee Porter, is an English brown porter that teases a potent coffee flavor and aroma to go with its light, malty taste. During the summer, pubgoers indulge in the Shiver IPA, a Northwestern-style microbrew that packs a powerful punch of hops accentuated by pine and citrus flavors. SalmonRiverBrewery.com. Nashville. Tune to table. Nashville has a deserved reputation as a creative place. After all, it is Music City, a true singer-songwriter's town, where writers often pair up for songwriting dates. This predilection for synergistic creative collaboration extends to Nashville's vibrant arts, technology, and entrepreneurial scenes, and notably into the culinary community. Unlike hyper-competitive restaurant markets in other areas, Nashville's chefs and restaurateurs are constantly sharing kitchens, whether for a charity dinner or just to help out a friend who's down a line cook or dishwasher for the evening. When a new restaurant is in the final push to open, they can expect regular family meal deliveries during the days before opening from industry compatriots, be it barbecue from Martin's Barbecue Joint and Peg Leg Porker, or buckets of delicious fried chicken from the farmhouse. Rather than hiding the identity of a local farm that supplies their microgreens or the best heirloom tomatoes, Nashville restaurants happily shine a spotlight on their purveyors, posting their names on the menu or on chalkboards conspicuously displayed near the front door. The city supports specialty noodle shop Nicoletto's Italian Kitchen, where pasta pros wholesale their wares to restaurants like City House and Lachlan Table for talented chefs to turn into inventive dishes. The pasta shop also sells directly to consumers for home use. Bill and Leanne Cherry of Bear Creek Farm raise some of the most spectacular grass-fed Angus beef you'll find anywhere in the country. The Cherries could easily trigger a bidding war between chefs for their grain-finished, hormone-free beef primals that they dry age for at least 1 month before processing to order in their own facility. Instead, they divvy up whole animals between local restaurants to ensure the maximum utilization that they care for so conscientiously. The 404 Kitchens chef, Matt Bolas, achieves the perfect char on the tri-tips, which he features on his menu after slow cooking the large cut for 72 hours, including two passes on a big green egg grill to achieve the perfect char. Acclaimed Husk chef Katie Koss is married to a Bear Creek farm ranch hand and lives on the farm where she can watch the peacefully grazing cattle that will eventually contribute to the ribeyes that she sells for $3.50 an ounce. Amazingly, the ground beef from those same cows appears on the menu at iconic Nashville Meat and Three Arnold's Country Kitchen, where chef Khalil Arnold converts it into magical minute steaks and meatloaf at a fraction of the fare at Husk. The best collaborations are two-way streets, as with Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery partnership with True Bee Honey to create award-winning new products. The distillery sends its used bourbon barrels to True Bee to age wildflower honey, and then afterward uses the same honey barrels to finish special lots of its Belle Meade bourbon, one of which received a coveted double gold at the prestigious 2019 San Francisco Wild Spirits Competition. Like the songwriters of Music Row, Nashville culinary professionals know that sometimes it takes a team to create a huge hit. MartinsBBQJoint.com, PeglegPorker.com, TheFarmHouseTN.com, Nicoletto's.com, CityHouseNashville.com, LockAndTable.com, BearCreekBeef.com, The404Nashville.com/kitchen, HuskNashville.com, ArnoldsCountryKitchen.com, GreenbrierDistillery.com, and TrueBeeHoney.com. Bozeman, Montana. Mountain Town Mastery. There's no lack of elk or trout in Bozeman, but in Montana, people hunt or catch those things themselves, and the bison steak from Ted's Montana Grill is the same one you can get in New York City. Instead, marvel at the quality and breadth of Bozeman's food scene beyond mountain town predictability. as this city of 50,000, the gateway to Yellowstone National Park, as well as fly fishing and Big Sky Resort skiing, is full of good local eating in all kinds of unexpected categories. From hummus, you'll find Z's Me's Market all over town, to bagels, a whole wheat everything shouldn't work, but at Bagels Works, it does. The best restaurant in town is basically the same Neapolitanish pizza-slash-Italian restaurant you might find in San Francisco or Los Angeles, but it's also just as good. Dark and homey, Blackbird Kitchen makes its own pasta. Try the gnocchi with short rib ragu, and roasts meats and vegetables in the wood-fired pizza oven. For pizza, opt for one with fennel sausage and cream, or with prosciutto with crabapple mostardo. 406 Brewing is one of around a dozen craft breweries in the Bozeman area. You won't find their beer in many bars or restaurants, let alone supermarkets, as owner Matt Muth likes to keep things small and unpredictable. Instead of trying to just pump a whole bunch of beer out into the market, I really wanted to play around with different styles, he says. In addition to Muth's El Jefe Weizen, you'll find such obligatorily clever named beers as the Anti-PA and Putin's Revenge Imperial Stout. Save room for sweets and lots of them. You'll find Beckett Confections, rich, buttery caramels all over the state, but you can also stop by the factory on, no kidding, Caramel Court to assemble your own variety bag. Start with salt chocolate, espresso, and chipotle. Pick up discount seconds and ogle sheets of cooling sugar through a picture window. You'll also want to make more than one visit to La Chatelaine Chocolate Company, which has a small counter in the Baxter Building, home to Ted's Montana Grill, as well as a cafe location that is a bit like stepping into France, complete with Used Goods, a book by British cookery writer Elizabeth David, assorted cutlery, canonellas, and daily tea service. Owners Wadley and Sharon Grochowski, he's French, she's a native Montanan who now has dual citizenship, nail the classics, almond coconut, Janduja, peanut butter cups, but specialize in local and ambitious, Montana huckleberry and mint, into the forest, Douglas fir-infused ganache with red peppercorn and goji berry, and dandelion. Ingredients come from everywhere, from France to the community food co-op down the street. The chocolates are so delicate and fresh that you can't buy them anywhere else, though Chatelaine does ship. I can't say that most cities in Montana would embrace us, but Bozeman is a little more forward-thinking, says Shannon Gochowski, adding that France and Montana alike reward people who are both tough of spirit and tender of heart. It takes a certain type of person to really live and to make it here. BozemanBagelWorks.com, BlackbirdKitchen.com, 406Brewing.com, BiquetteConfections.com, ChatelaineChocolate.com, Bozo.coop. Santa Fe, Mountain Town Mastery. The Shed. One of the best places to eat in Santa Fe is also one of the oldest, and it's a watering hole for locals and tourists alike. Around since 1953, the Shed, right off the plaza, is always good, always crowded, and always worth the wait, because there will be one, no matter what time you go. It's boots and jeans casual, like Santa Fe itself, and the courtyard is terrific if the weather's nice, which it usually is. The flat enchiladas are fiery, especially if you go for the red-green combo, a.k.a. Christmas, but easily cool down with one of their super-strong margaritas. The Shed Silver is a favorite. SFShed.com. Modern General. Modern General feels like it was uprooted from someplace in Brooklyn, but somehow it works just fine near the Santa Fe Rail Yard Park. The kitchen and garden-centric retail boutique is the baby of Aaron Wade, proprietor of the Build Your Own Saddle Organic Bistro Vinaigrette, which is an easy walk away. The ever-inventive Wade conceived Modern General with her sister, who not surprisingly lives in New York's trendiest burb. There are Dutch DeWitt gardening tools, crocks of French Pommery mustard, simple pottery from Ohio Stoneware, and bags of coffee beans from Cuvée Coffee, a roaster in Austin, Texas, where she has another vinaigrette location. In the small cafe in the back of Modern General, you can order up some supercharged antioxidant, not really pancakes for breakfast, or take a handful of cookies to go. Modern General AlonLine.com. Santa Fe Spirits. Colin Keegan started making hard apple cider and brandy with apples from his Tasuki, New Mexico orchard several years ago. Back then, distilling was just a hobby, a way to use his surplus. His apple brandy, still made with local apples, is now one of the signature liquors at Santa Fe Spirits, along with several others he makes. Expedition Vodka, made from Sangre de Cristo water and corn. Silver Coyote Pure Malt Whiskey, a white, not brown, liquor that's fruity and dry rather than smoky. And Kolkegan Single Malt Whiskey, made with mesquite smoked barley. You can visit, taste, or order up a cocktail made with one of his spirits, then buy a bottle to take home. SantaFeSpirits.com. Seattle, Global Local Emerald City Eats. The most important work at Komonegi in Seattle's Fremont neighborhood happens in a small closet. That's where owner Mitsuko Soma and some of her deputies spends hours each day making the restaurant's Japanese soba noodles by hand. Rolled and cut, they join Northwest Specialties, Spot Prawns, Razor Clams, and Buckwheat Honey in a parade of dishes emblematic of the best of Seattle's current culinary scene. Personal and craft-driven, here the talent is creatively turning something from somewhere else into a local cuisine. It's a pattern in action at Alcove, where Emmy Collins marries her Seattle upbringing and Afro-Brazilian roots to serve dishes like moqueca made with local halibut, and again at Archipelago, where Aaron Verosa cooks a dozen courses of Filipino food seen through a Pacific Northwest lens for 8 people at a time. Dishes like Washington-raised steak topped with arosa sauce based on banana ketchup. Each of these spots has been nourished by the community, some literally through crowdfunding, and that community's home base is Book Larder. To call this bright, energized space a bookstore is a disservice to the cooking classes and meals it offers. To call it a cookbook shop would be to forget about the non-food books it carries that line up with its ideals of inclusivity and social justice. It is, in the vein of San Francisco's Omnivore and New York's Bonnie Slotnick, a home and gathering place for the city's food lovers and hungry visitors, where people congregate in search of their own answers to what, how, and why we eat what we do. In Seattle, most often the answer to how is washed down with a local beer. At Lucky Envelope, Ray Kwan and Barry Chan employ the same global-looking outlook of Seattle's food scene through brews like Two Pepper Pale Ale, Habanero and Shishito, if you're wondering, and tea-smoked Helles Lager. Like all of the makers in Emerald City right now, what Chan and Kwan create tells you immediately who they are and where you are, as the best food and drink does. KimonaGSeattle.com, AlcoveSeattle.com, ArchipelagoSeattle.com, BookLarder.com, LuckyEnvelopeBrewing.com. Denver, Mile High Marketplace. Zagat named Denver the fourth most exciting food city of 2018. What's so exciting? Eating hyper-local by neighborhood. More than 250 new restaurants in 2018. Award-winning chefs, makers, and restaurateurs, four of whom were semifinalists in the 2019 James Beard Awards. You can partake by food marketplace. Denver boasts seven of them, including Chef Frank Bonanno's Milk Market, which features 13 different concepts, Zeppelin Station, which serves as a train stop, workspace, and international cuisine hotspot, and the Stanley Marketplace, which features the farm fresh and intimate Annette, helmed by Carolyn Glover, 2019 James Beard semifinalist for Best Chef Southwest. Or partake by neighborhood. In historic Larimer Square, try Jennifer Jasinski's Artichoke Tortelloni as the award-winning Rioja, or Taco Sushi at TAG, Tag. In Lohi, Lower Highlands, explore the international cuisine at Linger, a former mortuary space, or creative new dishes at The Bindery, a former book bindery. In Reno, River North, Art District, the city's current top restaurant hotspot, don't miss Andrea Frizzi's Risotto at Il Posto, or one of the best steaks in the city at Acorn. If Israeli food is your jam, head for award-winning Elon Shaya's Safta at the Source Hotel and Daniel Asher's Ashkara. Denver honors its agricultural heritage, so you'll find plenty of lamb, trout, and Colorado-raised beef on mile-high menus. In the early fall, Palisade peaches from the western slope are a must. Green chili is a regional specialty, too. Coloradoans like theirs served on or in breakfast burritos. If you're still hungry on your way out of town, Denver International Airport has the country's best airport food. Seriously. Try breakfast or lunch at Root Down, local maker fare at Denver Central Market, and craft beer at the New Belgium Taproom. Coming soon in a multi-million-dollar airport expansion, a second location of Mercantile F&B from James Beard Award-winning chef Alex Seidel. DenverMilkMarket.com, ZeppelinsStation.com, StanleyMarketplace.com, AnnetteScratchToTable.com, RiojaDenver.com, Tag-Restaurant.com, LingerDenver.com, TheBinderyDenver.com, ElPostoDenver.com, DenverAcorn.com, EatWithSafta.com, TheSourceHotel.com, AshkaraDenver.com, FlyDenver.com.
Thank you for joining us for the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Your narrator has been Jack. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas. Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Noon Book Hour, followed by Music and Memories at 1.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 64 and partly cloudy. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-80s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 12 noon.
It's time for the Noon Book Hour. An hour-long reading of books hand-selected by staff and read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas.
The Girl from Charnel by K. L. Cook. The rain settled into a slow drizzle. She lay there, still, and concentrated on the sound of the dripping water from the trees. When she sat up, her stomach cramped. She tightened her muscles until the pain receded and then straightened her back. Had there been a rock underneath her? She breathed to clear the after effects of the cramps. She put her hand beneath her on the sleeping bag. She pressed her fingers between her legs, thick, wet, mucousy. An alarm went off in her head. He had put something on, hadn't he? She brought her fingers to her face. It smelled like blood. Her first time. There was supposed to be blood and some pain. That's what she had heard. So this was normal. "You okay, Laura?" He put his hand on her shoulder, moved his fingers over the back of her neck. "I have to pee," she said. "Need some light?" "No. Just a little?" He reached down and turned the lamp up. For a shocking moment, the tent was ablaze, but he quickly adjusted the knob. He reached between his legs and pulled off the condom and tossed it into the corner of the tent. She looked down. The plaid flannel of the sleeping bag was darkly stained. He pushed back the tent flap with a watery thud. "I think it's over," he said. "It's pretty muddy, though. Be careful. Here, give me your hand." His voice was gentle. She slipped her nightshirt over her head and bunched the shirt between her legs. She grabbed one of the towels and moved to the opening and looked under his arm to the darkness outside. It sounded like it was still raining, but she realized it was just the trees dripping. "I can't see." "I'll take the lamp out and hold it for you." "No, I can do it myself."
"Sure?"
"Yeah," she said hoarsely. He stepped over the sleeping bag and grabbed the lamp. He saw the stain on the bag. When he looked back at her, the lamp illuminated his face. Wrinkles lined his forehead. "Are you sure you're okay?" "I need to go pee," she said, reaching for the lamp. "Let me help you." "Just give me the lamp." "Here," he said, moving to the entrance. "I'll hold it."
"No!"
Her voice was much louder than she intended, with a ferocity that surprised them both. Her voice echoed on the lake. They stood still, facing each other. His face had a stunned, slack expression. He seemed frail and ridiculous standing there naked in front of her. "Just give me the lamp," she said quietly. He handed it to her, and she left the tent, stepping onto the cold, wet ground. Blown leaves gathered at her feet. She walked around the tent where he couldn't see her, set the lamp on a flat rock, pulled her shirt up, and crouched. She tried to urinate, but felt her stomach cramping again, and then the pain flared hotly in her back. Her hair dangled in her eyes. She lost her balance and pitched forward onto the ground. Mud on her face, a twig lodged in her mouth. She spit weakly and then laughed. What a fool she was! The ground was cool and hard, but strangely comforting. The pain was gone, but she just wanted to lie there for a minute. Footsteps fast over wet leaves. She thought of a movie she had once seen, a western, where an Indian scout lay on the ground in the rain and listened for the hooves of the cavalry. She remembered the scout's words in that truncated movie Indian language. "They come." She laughed again. And then he was there beside her, his hands on her face, brushing away.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Noon Book Hour, followed by Music and Memories at 1.
Now here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 76 and cloudy. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the low 60s. Then tomorrow, thunderstorms with a high in the mid-70s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s.
From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 12 noon.
It's time.